This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 378 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Linda Z. Linda, thank you so much for your very special support via Patreon. And if you'd like to, if you're wondering what Patreon is and what a co-producer is, stay tuned. We'll give a little more information at the end of the show. And there are still a few, very few spots left on our Pod Abroad 2021 trip. We'd love to hear from you. You can find out more at podabroad.com. And we invite you to join our text community. Send us a hello to 916-659-5112. This episode is sponsored by Michelle Thomas.
And now, on to our read-along. This week, we are continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along we're going to start with chapter 59, entitled Froggy Goes A-Courtin'.
So this is one of those times when there's a letter, but there's no date. It may have happened before, and it may happen again. I just don't remember because I don't keep lists of these things. I just know I make a big deal about dates and there's no date here. So I was a little surprised, but whatevs. So Lord John is writing Jamie.
I just felt awkward for everybody. Like everybody. Like there's not a single person I didn't feel awkward about in this chapter.
It's a lot of awkward in this chapter.
Right. So
the letter is basically an apology letter saying he's sorry for introducing him to a certain Josiah Quincy, because now Jamie's name is being associated with the Committee of Correspondence in North Carolina. And Lord John is concerned for Jamie because Lord John has an idea that these future patriots, you know, so-called delinquents now, right? Those who are quote-unquote for liberty. He's concerned that Jamie is becoming, at least his name, is becoming aligned with them or situated, associated with them. And he also understands, although he was much younger than Jamie, he also understands what happened in Scotland. So he cares for Jamie. Obviously, he cares for Jamie, but he cares for Jamie as a friend. And of course, he's the stepfather to Jamie's son. He does care for Claire. He cares for Brienne. So this whole thing, it's not just a Jamie thing. Yes, he's concerned for Jamie. Maybe more than the others. But at this specific thing he's talking about is he's worried because he's heard Jamie's name among those or being associated with this committee of correspondence. And he advises Jamie to distance himself as much as possible from these people and the committee. He also warns Jamie that mail isn't safe, but our dude has known this.
Not just not safe. These people who are reading it are like boldly initialing it, saying saw it and then forwarding it on.
But our dude Jamie has known this since
how many books ago?
John. Yeah, Lord John was in his 20s, because we were with Jamie and Claire in France. We were with Jamie when he brought on Wee Fergus. We understand that mail is not secure. So I don't think Jamie is fooled for a minute.
No, but they're more bold. Like, at least they were pretending to not read them and seal them back up and send them on. But these people were like, I'm initialing this so everybody knows. I've seen it first. These are like the internet comment people who have to be first in a comment section on a YouTube video.
In there, they're doing it for clout, for whatever.
What if they're doing it for clout?
On an internet situation when someone says first, there never has been a reason or a purpose to hide. I mean, they may have an anonymous account, but there never has been a need or a purpose or a reason to hide yourself from commenting on a blog post. If you comment, your comment is never secret. You can be anonymous, but your comment is never secret. So I totally get it, right? It is similar to someone saying first and then like leaving. But in the vein of someone intercepting mail and then leaving their initials on it.
They're just pissing on it. I mean, it's just a pissing contest.
They obviously aren't trying to hide anything because they're letting it known. Like, they don't care. They're straight up like leaving their autograph.
Yeah, they're
like,
we know.
Like you said, their initials. So it's similar. I do get it. But I would say the people intercepting the mail, which is, I believe, at that point was, you know, not legal.
Right. But there's like no other reason to initial something other than to let somebody know I read this before you. Like, I already know. There's no secrets.
I see the similarity, but there is a huge difference between intercepting something that's not legal. Like, you commenting on a blog post first or anything is completely not against the law. You intercepting mail is not okay. And so it's definitely flagrant everything to leave your initials. It's kind of entertaining, but yeah, it's a lot of cojones. It's just, yeah, it's a lot of, wow. Lord John is straight up retelling the story of Jamie pre-Culloden. Quote, I can only hope that no incriminating document containing your name falls into the hands of persons with the power to arrest or instigate or other proceedings against the speakers of such sedition as appears in it. Unquote.
I mean, I think he should have been more specific in saying, I should only hope that this doesn't fall into the hands of somebody with more clout than me, because I am your go-to to get you out of.
I can hide this stuff. Yes. We get it, Lord John, but Jamie's been in a lot worse. I meant stitches. Jamie's been in a lot worse stitches before. He could actually school you. Now, the one thing that Jamie, I don't want to say Jamie has or hasn't done. He hasn't done it as officially as Lord John, definitely. But something that Lord John has done, if I'm not mistaken, and I don't think I'm making this up. I may make some stuff up accidentally, but I don't think I'm making this up. Lord John served or has served as a, I don't know if the word is spy, but he's served as a spy before, right? He's collected intelligence. So that gives me some Frank vibes right there.
I mean, is that solely in the bulges? Because I'm like, that's not anything that I think is part of, I mean, it's all canon, right? Because it's all written by Diana, but I'm just saying it's not part of.
It's referred to, yeah, or it's referenced in the big books. It is, yeah. Not, because the big books
but
don't
it's
talk
not
about
on,
like that. And actually.
But it's off page. Is it off page according to the big books?
I don't know if it happens in this book or next one. Maybe it's at the end. I think it's at the end of this book. But at some point, this book or next book, there's a person. I'm not going to spoil anything because if you know who I'm talking about, great. If you don't, this does not change anything. There's a person named Percy whom we get to know. And the way, one of the ways, John knows this person is because Percy's a straight up spy. But John was in those circles. That's why I say John, you know, John's a king's man through and through. He always... At this point, he always will be. From what we know, he always will be. He'll always do his best to protect Jamie and his family. But yeah. So John knows what happened, even if Culloden didn't happen, but he knew Jamie in a similar kind of way around or because of a war. Even if Jamie hadn't been a traitor or nabbed as a traitor, if Lord John felt the same for him, I think Lord John would still try to help him because of his feelings for him, right? And his friendship. But even if there hadn't been a whole wrongly accused whatever thing, I mean, Jamie was a Jacobite, or at least fought on that side. But Jamie was, and if you guys have read with us or read without us, all of this is not news to us, right? Jamie, that's why I just quoted that line from John. It's not funny, but it's a little bit late, right? Jamie has been through this. The exact, a slightly different, slightly worse, right? Or maybe a lot worse. A very similar thing that he just said, I don't want your name to appear in these documents for which you could get into big fat trouble. It already happened. The stinking, I almost said JP2, not JP2. James Charles. One of his names is Charles, I'm sure. James's son, Charles. Charles Stewart. Charles Stewart was the one who screwed over Jeremy. He was the one who screwed over Jamie first. So this is nothing new. It's not fun. It's not pleasant. It's not positive, but it's nothing new. And Jamie knows from his chats and his mental prep with Claire and Brianna and Roger that shiz is coming down. And as I've remarked recently, I think it was two chapters ago or the last episode at least, throughout, I think, book five and definitely in the beginning of book six, there are several things that happen where Jamie and Claire in an intimate moment, after which they have an intimate moment, and when they're in bed or they're relaxing amongst themselves, they say, one of them asks, is it time? Is it time? That happens several times. Well, the last time we asked this, Jamie says, I think it was Jamie who answered, it's time. So now we're past the it's time. Like, we're there. So Jamie, this is not news to Jamie. As far as he knew, at some point he's going to have to like take a public stance, and he hasn't yet, but he knows it's time. We've got the official it's time stamp. But yeah, so Lord John's trying to protect him, and Jamie has been through this virtually the exact different countries, different situation, but a very similar situation. He's been through it. And this time, the biggest difference is that almost nothing he can do can change the future. Well, they already learned that. But this time, he knows he's on the right side, or the winning side.
This has to be worse than Culloden. It has to be worse, because when they started the Culloden thing, they thought they had a chance. They thought that it mattered. And this, knowing that nothing they do will matter, this has to be worse.
That's true.
So you have to second guess every choice you make. Is this the choice? Is this the time? Is this the moment? Because if you want history in this moment to continue as it should, right? Because you want America to be the America that Bree grew up with in their instance. And if you want all of those things to happen, it's like is just sitting to the sideline and letting it happen enough? Or do you have to actively participate? Did you always participate? Time travel. Blah!
I think they have a choice. I mean, obviously they have a choice. I think they could have stayed in the Caribbean. They could, or gone to back to France. Oh, they wouldn't go to France because of the upcoming
They couldn't have stayed
revolution.
In the Caribbean. They were on the run.
Well, I know. My point is they could have gone somewhere else. I don't know where that is. Maybe Italy. But they could have gone somewhere else. And not to the colonies. And
we should create a map with timelines of the safe countries to be during the different time eras. Like, okay, we can be here for 100 years, but then we got to go to this other place because that place isn't going to be safe for about 20 years after that. So then we got to go to here. Like, if you just were hopping to the different continents.
That is interesting. And I guess it was an interview. It was recorded. I think, yeah, you can go listen to it. It didn't come up in there. But when I chatted with the makers of the board game, the Outlander board game, it was very interesting. And they did their best to stick to the story and the world and all that. But that's a fascinating, like, maybe not board game, but mental practice. Like, it could be a different board game. Claire and Jane, like, especially for people who have read all the books, mm-hmm. You say, well, chapter book one, like, done. Book one and two kind of go together, right? Because they're on the way. Claire falls back, and then they're on the way to Culloden. Culloden ends, and then boom, she has Bree.
Because she's done. Back. She's done.
Exactly.
At that point, she's done because she doesn't have time to learn anymore. But if she goes, yeah. But when she goes back, she had time to learn more.
Books one and two, there's not really any wiggle room, right? Because it was just what it was. Book three, if it weren't for freaking losing Ian. Book three, they were looking at, well, actually she thought of maybe staying in Scotland, but yeah, or Lallybroch, whatever, but you know, too much time had gone by. It was no longer Jamie's place. So they were thinking about where to go. And then at that point, she's like, yeah, France is not an option. So yeah, definitely starting with Voyager, book three forward, or at least basically look at the year Voyager begins or the year Claire goes back and look at history, at least in Europe. In the Americas, Canada, maybe just look at Canada is in the Americas. But anyway, yeah, I agree with you. That would be interesting to look at the world, the places where they could have gotten to somehow. And between the time period of when Claire goes back and maybe early 19th century. So because we don't know how long they're going to live. I am guessing they're going to live into the 1800s, but maybe what, 1810, 1820, something like that. So look at that time period and see. Where is there no war?
Right.
Where is there no famine? And you two, like, play a game. Like, everyone has their own, or do your research and then just put it on a map. You know what I mean? That would be interesting to see. Where would you send them? And then...
Well, and everyone would have a different idea, because what is pleasing to you might not be pleasing to me. So if I'm looking for not only a time of peace, but a specific type of landscape, then I would choose perhaps a different route than you for my time period and my timeline. Or if I'm into it,
I want to see all the answers. I don't want to do it. I want to see all the answers.
Into it, and I wanted to fight for all the things and be a part of the big moves, then that's a different story too. But if you're choosing to be a part of the big moves, which they have done, they chose to stay and build the Americas for Brianna, right? So they chose to stay and do that and be a part of that. But having chosen that, there's a lot more moving pieces than you can account for. And history is written by the winner. So we, even now, still don't have all of the answers of everything that happened. So I don't even think there's a history book that would be comprehensive enough that you could take back and use as a guide, other than just like the larger skirmishes, you know?
Yeah, I just think that, I mean, I'm happy that Diana had them go where they went, or she wrote them where they, as she did, because it gives us through book 10. I mean, right. If she hadn't taken us back to the colonies, I'm sure and she continued the story, she obviously would have found somewhere to put them. But, and I think once you decide on the colonies, once you get into the colonies, I don't think you have much of a choice as an author. I mean, there's always the choice, but I don't know that you have much of a choice other than having them, if they're going to stay there, to be somehow part of the revolution of the upcoming war in some way. Because, but besides that, honestly, looking from like a bird's eye view or just a practical thing, as they learned, it didn't matter what they did, Culloden was going to happen, right? It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. What they could affect, and this is what I think I've learned, not about real life, but about Diana's Diana's right. Gabaldonian theory of time travel. You can't change, and I'm not saying it couldn't happen, but thus far, you can't change big world events. You can affect change in people's individual lives. So who knows if she hadn't gone back or fallen through time, all that. The one thing that they could change, although it could have always been this way, right? The one thing that they were able to do was to save the men of Lallybroch. And that made all the difference, because that entire estate, although they had a hardship, they survived. So Culloden happened, the clearances happened, like the burnings happened, all these things happened, and it was not easy for them, but they did survive in the end. And so all I'm trying to say is, as a reader, as an observer, I don't think it matters what Diana would have had them do or had them go, because the Patriots, the now American side was going to win no matter what. I mean, it was, I'm not saying it couldn't have gone the other way in history. I'm saying Jamie and Claire joining the war effort did not change the outcome. That's all I'm saying.
No, but I did just get a really ripping idea for a book, so I'm going to have to...
Don't share it.
I'm not. I'm filing it away.
Are you going to actually write something?
I don't know. Don't.
So we've already been through Culloden, blah, blah, blah. Jamie. Lord John's basically preaching to the choir. Like, Jamie could probably teach him a thing or two, but of course he can't share all the deets. So, but to help smooth anything over, this is from Lord John. To help smooth things over, here's my other dude, Bobby Higgins, who can help you with, stuff. Deliveries of docks, and you can totally trust this dude. And by the way, I think he has like women on the mind. You might want to help him out. And he says, an update on William. He's bought a lieutenant's commission.
How old is he?
He has to be in his late teens, early 20s.
Oh, this is the problem with not giving me dates, because I was like, the last time we saw William, he was like, what, 10?
You got to go back. Yeah, it was in Drums of Autumn.
Yeah,
I think he was 12. He was like 12.
12? Okay. I'm just thinking they're just so young. So young. Because he's not that much younger than Brianna. And Brianna is how old? Like in her mid-20s? Late-20s?
At least mid-20s. She was she was 22, 23, I think. Maybe 22 when she went back in Drums of Autumn. So you'd have to, and now, yeah, you'd have to count. Drums of Autumn is the book that gives us, I think, the most dates as far as helping us then later calculate the ages of people here. So William's bought a commission. Lord John is again, we learn, in the role of diplomat. And he is trying to to diplomat for is Bobby Higgins.
Is that a verb?
No, it's not. No, he's trying to help with.
I've heard diplomat as a noun in many ways. Like there is a, I believe, a cookie that is called a diplomat, and a diplomat as a noun as a person who has a role as a diplomat. But yeah, diplomating as a verb is
it's
not
news,
what I was ready for.
Yeah, I don't think it's a real thing. I think I made it up. But fair. He's doing, playing, giving, trying, giving his hand at diplomacy for Bobby Higgins. Bobby Higgins, he
poor
wants
Bobby.
His hole.
Stop it. You can't pause there.
Can you please help him?
Can you not say he wants his hole? Stop it.
That's what he wants. He wants to get married, but he wants
his
hole too.
He wants to get married, but come on.
Come on.
He genuinely cares for these girls, but they're the only
girls. He likes them both so much, he can't choose.
But they're the only girls in his stratosphere, so he's like, these are the only two.
He says, basically, Lord John is like saying to Jamie, could you please help him? There are two ladies, you see, and he can't choose.
Well, I'll tell you what. I do not want to be Malva after Lizzie's dad says no.
No, that's true. That's sloppy seconds. Yep.
Right?
So he offers Lord John to try and entice the deal, I guess, encourage Jamie. He offers to purchase Lizzie and her father's indentures so that they're both free because Bobby said he couldn't choose, but then he says she's Bobby's number one choice. So whatever. Bobby knows. Of course, he may like them the same, but he has a choice. His choice is Lizzie. To Jamie, he says it's because he's afraid of Malva's dad, rightly so.
He's afraid of Malva's dad, but he also said that you have sway, not just for the indenturedness, but you have sway in the Weems' life. So I believe that you could coerce the Weems into letting Bobby have Lizzie. It sounds bad, but that's the truth. And
he believes that Jamie would have influence, I would say.
How bad are your prospects? That you need someone to do this for you.
It's sad.
I know. I feel bad. And he's a good guy.
Of course, what Lord John doesn't know is that Lizzie and her father are already free, but it's not public knowledge because if it were, then they wouldn't publicly be seen as Jamie's property and thus be afforded the public perception of protection that comes with being, I'd say owned, being protected by being a property of whatever of Jamie. So yeah, so they're free. They actually have been free for quite a while, but the world doesn't know that. But that was kind of him to offer.
I wouldn't want anyone to know that either.
No, me either.
I think if I were someone's indentured servant, I'd be like, cool, you paid me off and I'm free now, but can we just pretend that I'm still your indentured servant? Can I just stay here?
Can I just help you out? Like, I'll help Mrs. Bug. I'll help out with the laundry.
The association with you is so good that it will ward off anybody else from dicking with me. You know what I mean? It's like the protective nature of it. Heck yeah. And it was, you know, Jamie.
Fuck yeah. So Jamie and Claire chat about the likelihood of Lizzie or Malva's father's approving such a marriage. And Jamie also gives a side remark about Roger taking care of his flock. Quote, takes the welfare of his flock to heart with an eye to his own, nay doubt. Unquote. There's a little bit in there to read between the lines, but Roger wants to make a match between Amy McCallum and Tom Christie. But then Amy McCallum, the widow, looks at Roger a certain way, and Brianna has seen the way the widow looks at Roger that way. But Roger hasn't noticed it. He's clueless in that.
But that's the whole thing, is that it's not while it is important how Roger responds to the widow, it almost doesn't matter, because it doesn't matter that people don't see him responding, people see her looking. So as a group and as a tribe or whatever, everyone knows, and it just makes it weird and uncomfortable, and she's not changing her attitude, you know. So it's like, it does need to go all the way back to her. It doesn't matter that Roger's like, I'm not encouraging it. You're not encouraging it, but you're also not shutting it down because you're blissfully unaware.
So then we get to a scene. Malva is there straining liquid penicillin off of the scraps of the food scraps. And these food scraps are ready to be fed to the pig. And she tells Claire she's done. And Claire's like, that's fine. She's like, you don't want me to do it, right? And Claire's like, no, I'll do it. So Claire is happy to feed the scraps to the pig who's under the house. Claire just reaches out, bends out the window. And like, she goes, here, pig, whatever. And then she like drops it off. And I wrote, you know what? No wonder that pig lives forever. She feeds it all the penicillin. It's never going to die.
I mean, that's only if it has like a bacterial infection.
Yeah, but that's...
It's not going to help it if it has like a viral infection. Penicillin doesn't do...
Oh, well.
Or like tetanus. Yeah. Or what if she like does something stupid? Cure for,
there's only a there's a vaccine to prevent tetanus. There's no... I don't know today if there's no treatment. I don't know.
Lockjaw, man.
That.
If it's too late, you're done. I don't think that there's a way to reverse lockjaw.
I don't think so either. Claire asks Jamie if he's thought of trying to convince... this is funny. Lord John regarding the coming war. Like... get him to flip sides. Jamie laughs. He's like, yeah, no, he's the king's man. He would not abandon his oath. It ain't going to happen. And Jamie says he's fighting, meaning he, meeting Jamie, is fighting on the Patriot side for Claire and for Brianna and for Wee Gem for the future. Quote, and if that is not an ideal, I've never heard of one. Unquote. So, because they had a little conversation about, is this war, is it truly for ideals or what? So, and they're like, yeah, pretty much. They agree. So they have a chat with, I think, oh no, Claire is there, but the chat is between Jamie and Mr. Weems. And Jamie asks him, tells him the situation about Bobby Higgins and how he wants to marry Lizzie. And it ain't going to happen. At the end of it.
At the end of the day, you're another day older.
That's true. Long story short, Mr. Weems says the brand, it all comes down to the brand. It is too much. Even if Bobby treated Lizzie like a queen, it's public perception. It's like by Bobby being perceived a certain way and treated a certain way and perhaps or definitely shunned or maybe even like, you know, getting in the wrong crowd and being beaten up or killed, it leads Lizzie and whatever kids they have to potential danger, to losing the husband. It's too much.
How big is this M on his face?
I don't know, but it has to be pretty big because they can see it across the distance.
I know, but I'm wondering if there was a way that Claire could have excised it. I mean, she's not going to skin graft and do stuff like that. But I mean, if it was small enough, like she did with the brand on Jamie.
I wouldn't think that she would excise it because it has to be pretty small.
Could you make it just look like a regular line instead of an M? Like
you can't, if you have an M, you can't make it into a line. I would not recommend cutting. Although maybe that's better. Claire would know. What I'm saying is, besides cutting, if it's too big, what you could do is figure out a configuration, like on paper, what's the least amount of damage I can do to cause the most obfuscation is the wrong word, the most change to this M, like the little dip in the middle that comes down. If I branded like a big flat circle over the M, it's like it's going to be a muddled circle with some points on it. It'll no longer be, you know what I'm saying? So you could brand again. Oh, I mean, I guess you could always put them under with ether and then brand. I mean, oh God, it just sounds awful.
I'm just saying, if the M is the problem, because you could turn it into an N by just getting rid of one of the little lines.
If it's too easy to tell it was a letter, you can tell it was a murder, M for murder, that's been messed with. So you don't even want it to look like a letter. That's the thing.
Well, what if you took, like I said, an M is like two lowercase L's with a V in the middle. What if you just put the two L's together? Like cut the little tiny V out in the middle and put the L's together.
That's going to be beyond my pay grade. You have to ask Claire.
Okay, fine.
So, but it did come down to the brand and what it stood for, of course. Not because of the way he looked, although I'm sure people would react to that, but because of what it stood for. And what I found interesting, and I will admit I'm being a little or a lot judgy here. I'm not incorrect. I might be slightly off base in stating this, because the reason Mr. Weems, once he said, nope, can't do it, Jamie's like, okay, then you need to tell the guy. And he's like, what? My first thought was, we know he's a little guy and all that, but I thought that was interesting that you're going to say no, which is totally his right. But you're not going to, you don't have the balls to tell Bobby the decision. But according to what he tells Jamie, it's not about his balls. It's about, he's like, oh, is he going to hurt me?
He's got a murderer brand on his face. He murdered someone before.
Exactly. So he says, quote, oh, sir, you will not leave me alone with him, unquote.
Good God.
Like he's scared. I don't think he's genuinely scared of Bobby.
He must be.
I just don't think he wants to be the one to deliver the news.
I think it's all of the above. But I mean, he clearly has fear of the gentleman because of his past. So he's been capable of it before. What would stop him from this? Because, you know, romance is passion, and passion leads people to do crazy things. And who wants to be on the receiving end of bad feedback, right? So, I mean, I get it. But at the same time, I feel like it's overblown given the way Bobby Higgins is and how he has been since he's been on Paige.
If, God forbid, he did this with just him and Mr. Weems, Bobby and Mr. Weems, and Bobby did get upset or whatever and, like, punched him or, killed him, do you think he's going to get away with it?
He's not only is he not going to get away with it, he's not going to get to marry the girl.
Well, not forget, the girl's gone at that point.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
He's probably going to be, if not killed by Jamie.
He doesn't realize he's in a position of power, Mr. Weems.
Yeah, exactly. I would say that. So it's a very sweet scene. They bring back Mr. Higgins and Jamie stays there while Mr. Weems says it. And Jamie's like, fine, I'll stick around. It's a very sweet scene, but it's sad. He asks, you know, it's very fair, if Lizzie's affections are given elsewhere, because he thinks, and this is true, I could feel this too. He thinks that if it's a fact of Lizzie really liking someone else, like, I can take that. I can handle that, right? But to be told that it's, you know, because of the way he looks or because of the brand or because of his background, that's something he couldn't change either one, right? He can't change himself and he can't change Lizzie loving someone else. But if it's someone else, like, that's completely out of his control and not his fault.
Right.
The face thing is kind of not his fault, but it's just sad that it's, yeah, whatever. And then apparently Bobby's heard of Jamie traveling somewhere before even Jamie does. And they kind of get back and forth and Jamie thinks, oh, this must be that meeting to choose the delegates for the Continental Congress.
Just that thing. That thing.
That thing.
To pick delegates for the Continental Congress. That just that thing. Little tiny thing. Not a big deal.
So, but what's weird to Jamie is that he had been in talks or had begun to be in talks with the Committee of Correspondence, but he had not been given the date or time of this Congress, of the meeting. And not just one, he wrote to 6 people and never got a response. And Claire says, oh, they must not trust you. Because, you know, that is very sacred information until they, because if the Brits found out, like, that's, you know, that's treasonous, right? So he thinks, yeah, it makes sense after he rescued the dude, or dudes, I guess, from being tarred and feathered, right? Mm. He understands, he not like it, but he understands why they don't trust him. And he's like, I get it. I kind of saved some loyalists and they think that doesn't show well and then they can't trust me. But actually makes that tracks, right? And he says, once they thought this through or talked this through, he's like, yeah. He could, like, push and write some more, but he's like, I just don't think it's worth risking showing up, whether to push the dudes or to, you know, because if he shows up, they may not do the thing they need to do. He might be killed. He might be kicked out. He might interrupt what they're doing, and then thus they might not do it. So he's like, yeah, it's just not worth it. I'm just not going to worry about it. And he looks at their gem candle, and he says he would hate to have to use another gem, but he might have to do so. And currently there are 2 left. One ostensibly for Roger or Bree, and one for Jemmy. But not yet. He says he will write a few more letters.
And that was chapter 59, The Awkward Froggy Goes A-Courting. Next, we'll be moving on to chapter 60, entitled The Pale Horseman Rides.
Roger wants Bree to go look in on some congregants who hadn't showed up for a church service while he accompanies some people into Brownsville, hoping that his presence will keep everything nicey-nicey. Someone from the Ridge wants to go ask for the hand of someone in Brownsville, and he's, with all the stuff that's been going on, there hasn't been any issue, there hasn't been any overt threat from them. Any word since they returned the body of Lionel Brown, but it's still Brownsville. So he's like, sure, I'll go. So Lizzie and Claire went along with Brianna. And as they're walking toward this cabin to go check on these congregants who didn't show up.
I mean, that's the good thing about church, right? in that time period. If nothing else, I mean, I'm not saying that there's not other good things about church, but I am saying that it's not just about the fellowship and the congregation and the learnings and the preaching. It's also about the community getting together and checking in and making sure everybody's
it
okay.
It is. And what is, I'm not saying it doesn't happen now. My guess is it's much more rare, at least in the U.S. It doesn't happen in the same way as often. For example, once, and now this was not to check up on me, like, because I had missed a Sunday or something, but I started going to a new church in the year 2000, I think. I started going to a church downtown, and I really liked it. And I was there only one time, and I filled out the little newcomer or whatever card, which I'm very, like, I'm very wary of those things, because I really want to, like, try it out a few times before I do that. Because once you give your information, it's not that it's private. I don't care about that. But then people can call you, and then they can come by your house. So what happened? No joke. I was still living with mom and dad. I was a student. I had finished my undergrad. It was in between undergrad and going to grad school. So like the year 2000 or 1999. And I was starting to go to this church. I'd been at least once or twice. And what their, at least back then, 21 years ago, their policy or their, they had like a whole, not a campaign, it's like a committee. So like their welcoming committee, right? The ones who do outreach and stuff. Their policy or their practice was, I'm not joking, to welcome new members or new prospective members with a pie.
No thanks.
It was sweet.
I don't need stranger food. It is sweet, but I don't need stranger food. Not stranger food that's not been health coded, that does not have an inspector come out and make sure there's not roaches in their kitchens.
So they drove, I was with mom and dad, right? So they came by the house and dropped it off. And I was like, oh, that's really nice of you guys. I had no warning. But anyway, my point is they were not checking up as far as like I had missed a Sunday or four, right? They just that. But this is what you're talking about. They're there to help establish community and maintain community. And so 21 years ago or 21 or 22 years ago, when I started attending a new church, and I did for a few years anyway, until I went away to go to grad school. When I was going there, when they got my info, they came and welcomed me. And I thought, that's kind of amazing. I'm sure other churches do just as wonderful things, but it was new to me. That experience was new to me. So it was really cool, and it made me go, oh, you know, maybe I want to go back. So I did. But that's one way that communities, churches, I can't speak for mosques or synagogues, but I would say any spiritual or religious community, right? And maybe even non-religious communities welcome people in some ways, or they want fellowship. So yeah, they absolutely at least showed me that I was important to them in to some capacity. They noticed me there. I mean, I gave them my info, but my point is they acknowledge me coming up there.
I'm just saying, I see the potential benefit in the backwoods of North Carolina in the 1700s, but today in this day and age with the internet, I don't need anybody coming to my house.
That's where I'm going. That's where I'm going.
I don't need anybody coming to my house.
So 20 years ago, that was their thing. It wasn't just I don't even know if they had an email list back then. They had a website, but I don't know if they had an email list. But 20 years ago, 22 years ago, that was their welcome. Now, they still may or may not do that. I don't know. However,
it's virtual pies now.
100%. If it was a community, I never found this out. Or I don't know. If there are communities today in the U.S., faith communities, whatever type, where it's a regular meeting like Sunday or once a week or whatever, and you don't show up, because basically the only way to see people or communicate was by letter, by phone, or in person. By the written word, by the phone, or in person. So we weren't calling each other. We weren't besties. They did actually come to my house, but that was just to welcome me. But other than that, like, there was no, you know, there was no consistent communication. So if someone wanted to reach out, they probably, since they had my little phone card, they may have called the house. Like, they may have if something happened, right? I don't know. They never did, but I guess it's possible. But yeah, that's my point. In the Ridge time, that's all you got. If so, you can't call. You can't. I mean, you can write, but that's kind of ridiculous. If you're going to write and then walk the letter over to their house, you may as well just go to their house. So yeah, this is the way that a community would check up on each other, is you go in person. So absolutely. And I agree with you 100%. That is one of the most beautiful things about communities, religious, non, whatever they are. If they're tight enough, or if they care enough and they're aware enough of their people, then when someone doesn't show up and they regularly do, and then they're absent and there's been no word kind of spread around.
They care. People notice.
Absolutely. Exactly. They care. And not just because, quote unquote, Christian thing to do. It's the nice thing to do. It's the right thing to do. But also, like, back in the backwoods, even if that person who didn't show up, you know, didn't have a crop that everyone relied on, didn't have, you know, wasn't related to Jamie, the head of the ridge or whatever. You know, it was there were so few of them, even though they had, you know, they could have a small crowd. There were so few of them, and they were all immigrants. All of these people were immigrants. That, yeah, it was very important to them to, that they were all they had, right? To keep track of each other.
That's what I'm saying. Like, this is the internet. The internet ruined personal relationships for everyone, because we can reach out to literally anyone we want right now at any time, and they'll get it eventually in the next day or minutes, depends on how often they check their social medias.
I've always loved learning languages. Michel Thomas lets me do this on the go. It's an app-based program for learning a new language.
The Michel Thomas method is your ideal companion for learning a new language because it's stress-free, works with how your brain naturally learns, and lets you relax or multitask while learning a new language so fast you'll surprise yourself.
It's easy to stay motivated while learning with Michel Thomas. You'll begin to speak and form your own sentences immediately. The method's creator, Michel Thomas, broke down entire languages into logical chunks or building blocks. As a learner, you are presented with these building blocks in a logical order and slowly build up the complexity, helping you to say what you want when you want.
Because you can listen on your phone or computer, your language course can be played anytime, anywhere, meaning no longer having to carve out time to learn a language, stick your nose in a workbook, or attend a class. You can simply press play wherever you are in your daily routine and continue making progress. Listen as you work from home, on your return to office commute, on a flight for your post-pandemic vacation, or curled up on your couch.
There are 17 languages offered in the foundation courses, including Modern Standard Arabic, Dutch, Italian, Mandarin, and Swedish. Beginners start out with a foundation of verbs as they listen to a teacher and two students. For more advanced language speakers, there are intermediate, language builder, vocabulary, and insiders courses offered on select languages.
Why choose Michel Thomas? Backed by science and based on principles of instructional psychology, the Michel Thomas method works with how the brain naturally learns by organizing information in a way that the brain prefers and can retain. As Michel Thomas himself said, what you understand, you know, and what you know, you don't forget.
Start your language journey with 25% off at www.michelthomas.com. That's michelthomas.com. Simply use discount code TOP or T-O-P at checkout to claim 25% off any Michel Thomas course.
Visit www.michelthomas.com, select your desired language and course level, and use discount code TOP at checkout to claim 25% off your purchase. Not redeemable on bundles.
The Michel Thomas method. Learn a language for good.
But my point is like, now we don't need fellowship. Personal fellowship, not the way that we did then, because we have connections in other ways now.
The need for it has changed. Whereas before, it fulfilled both the human, like, communication connection as well as a social connection, right? Now, like, you and I still get together. I mean, I know we're sisters. That's like kind of not, it's not the same thing. But we have a tie that we can help have. But I'm saying, yeah, if you have a chosen community, whether it's a church or whether it's a synagogue or whether it's a mosque or whether it's a book club or whether it's a sorority, whatever your chosen community is, typically that group, unless, you know, there's like someone overseas, like someone moves overseas and, you know, you have like maybe a Zoom, you include a Zoom so that they can join you virtually. Like, that's not what I'm talking about. That's great, but that's not what I'm talking about. I don't think getting together physically for social reasons has, the need for that social connection has not gone away.
No, but we've replaced it.
At a human level. I'm acknowledging it's gone away in our lives. I'm saying the need for it has not gone away. So when people have this, the connection as far as like communication, that's really easy now with the internet. But the human and social connection, meaning the in-person part, the need for that is still, I believe, biologically and socially there. But that's what, I can't say most, that's what a lot of people don't get or don't do.
For sure. We've just replaced so many things, I feel like.
Yeah.
Like today I saw my 13-year-old online and I was like, what are you doing? And they were like, I'm on Discord. And I was like, what are you doing on Discord? We're just talking about video games. And that's what's replaced playdates, is people just, you know, talking to people. And there's a part of me that's okay with that because it's in my house and I can monitor it and I can take care of it. But at the same time, it's like, I feel bad that they don't get to have those moments of personal interactions. Kind of like they, like, it's just not the same. Like when you are in someone else's house as a kid and you are the one friend that is present and there is no distractions and it's just you and your friend 100% one-on-one, mm-hmm. You can't really replace that with the internet. You just can't. You just can't.
Yeah, agreed. So Roger's gone to fulfill this capacity to check. Excuse me. Roger's gone to do a thing. He's asked Bree to go fulfill this capacity. And so on the way out, Bree loops in Claire and Lizzie and they meet Marsali on the way. Because she was out and about, and she comes with them. Now, they approach this cabin of the people, of the congregants, and the flies were the first sign of something not being right.
They always are, aren't they?
Yeah, they're gross. So they find out it's illness. The family had gotten some kind of bloody flux, and the mother was almost dead. The baby was almost dead. The father was not in the cabin, and they had a little girl who was not a baby, but who was also not well. They're all ill.
It's death by diarrhea. This is like Oregon Trail nightmare come to life.
Oh, heck. Yes, it's a lot. So basically, Claire does her best doctoring, has Brianna go get water. When she goes out to get water, she sees the father who had collapsed while trying to also go out and get water.
Ugh, and he's just like, save the bairns, save them. And they're like, we can't. They're dead.
Right. Well, they weren't dead at this point, but.
No, but they were dying. Come on.
So the mom dies and the infant dies.
That was awful.
That was not cool. But the father lives. Well, this is, we find out the next.
Quote unquote lives.
There's a whole like thing. She goes through and as they're prepping to, you know, help out with these people, Claire tells Bree not to put her fingers in her mouth. I mean, that sounds funny, but it's kind of gross. The reason I put LOL is because Bree was like, really? Ew.
Why would I do that?
Someone else's, well, not even my own, but anyone's diarrhea and blood in my mouth. Come on. So the family, ill and thirsty, they have no water or not enough strength to get water, had drunk Applejack. So they had drunk alcohol because it was what they had around.
Yeah, but it just dehydrates you more.
Yep, and more water leaves your body. So Bree coming back in with the water and reports that she'd seen the dad in the woods. Also, he had tried to go out and get water and had collapsed. She could tell from his poos that he had been stricken later. The quality of it, they were still somewhat solid. He had been stricken later than the rest of the family.
What a terrible epitaph. We could tell he was stricken later because his poos were more solid.
Oh, Summer. So Claire goes out and does a little triage and she finds him. And that's when he says, take care of the weans, take care of the babies. And Claire's like, well, we'll do our best. And she leaves him to get back to the kids because that's where the help, most help is needed. And it, yeah, as I said, it was the bloody flux. So Bree was helping the young child. Marsali was helping, trying to get the baby to drink, but it couldn't drink like from a cup. And Claire found through it, she checked for its reflex and found out it was an infant. And she grabs the boob of the dying mom, didn't get anywhere, and then asks Marsali to try and nurse her. And she does. She tries.
I would never travel with Claire ever again. Like, at no time did Marsali ever expect or Marsali ever expect that she would be expected to nurse a dying infant. Come on. I mean, it's good to be able to provide when you have the means, but that is not a vacation.
Well, no.
Or a trek. I would be like, that would be, I would need some like forethought to that. Okay, Marsali, we'd love you to come with us, but just know if we come across a dying infant, we're going to put some stranger's baby to your boob. You cool?
I mean, about consent, sure, but I don't think Marsali had any problem with this because she's like the mother figure. She's more of a motherly figure than Claire.
No, and she was fine with it. I'm just saying I would like some notice before I expose my tita to some rando child. I'm just saying.
Claire tries to get the mom, Hortense, to drink, but she only vomits. And she goes all ER on her, like thumping on her chest, but it's too late. She's died. And we hear from Marsali that the baby has died.
The only thing, no, that's not the correct term, because it's not the only thing, but it felt like a small mercy the way that Diana wrote the mother choosing to die, to not let the child go alone. So that felt like a small mercy, even though it also felt like not winning. You know what I mean? Like consolation in the face of defeat.
Mm.
If that makes sense. It was,
it
was cold comfort. Like it was comfort, but it was not warm comfort. It was not the comfort that makes you feel good. It was the comfort that made you feel okay about the bad thing, but not good.
Megan P. closes us out with, I kind of had a feeling when I saw the title of this chapter that there would be some death in here. I can't imagine how Bree, Marsali, Lizzie, and Claire stayed calm while dealing with Hortense and her children. All of the unknowns of that time were really scary. All of them worked together to try and save the entire family, a whole family, but sadly, two didn't make it. Claire is still unclear on what caused them all to be so sick, although she has theories. I hope they resolve this issue in the chapters to come.
And now we will be closing this week's episode with chapter 61, entitled A Noisome Pestilence. Why was that harder than I thought it would be? A Noisome Pestilence.
Long story short, Claire and the others care for the Ridge Dwellers who are affected by the Bloody Flux. And Mrs. Bug had helped too. Before she rests, though, she wants to go look at some poo under a microscope to see if she can correctly ID what the bug was.
As you do. Before you can rest, you want to look at some poo under a microscope? That is not ever anyone's before I rest. Do you know what I did before I rested last night? I peed, and then I got my pajamas on, and I went to bed. I'm like, come on.
That's a question for listeners. What do you do before you go to bed?
What makes you feel most comfortable to go to bed? I want to look at poo under a microscope. No one says that.
So she wanted to do it for her knowledge and also to be able to learn more and document the disease, most likely in Rawlings' notebook, right? Jamie tells her that while he was prepping their hot... This is also sad. Jamie tells her that while he was prepping the hot water for their tea, Bree came in, washed her arms and hands, and ladled boiling water over her skin.
Jesus! That would hurt.
Bree... And so obviously this is worrisome, and they're like, oh my gosh, did she get a blister? And he's like, yeah, I saw a blister, or did she get burned? He says, yes, I saw a blister on the outside of one of her arms. And Claire's like, Claire was alarmed. Don't get me wrong. Claire was not, overjoyed that she had done this, but she gets it. She understands. She's like, Bree has never seen plague nor war. She was born after penicillin was discovered, after these great, quote unquote, great wars. She had not known a life where lots of people died of illness.
From just being dirty.
She knew logically things had happened in the past and technically could.
Think about this. If you're helping your mom who is a surgeon, who is doing her best in the backwoods, if you're helping your mom and your mom says to you, don't put your hands in your mouth or don't put your hands in your face or don't do whatever, don't do this thing because your hands are filthy, right? How do you fix that? And maybe boiling water was the answer to that. Like you're just like, I don't feel clean. And I won't feel clean until my skin is blistering off of my hands. Ugh, good God.
Because if my skin can't stand it, then the bugs can't stand it either. So it's not just that Bree was not born or that Bree was born after those things. It's that she may have known logically that young kids could be taken, could literally go from morning to night and like be gone by evening. It had never crossed her mind. Once she made the decision to stay in the 18th century to give birth, I think she knew there was, she was aware of issues with, going through birth, with children, surviving all of that. But her being there in that cabin, seeing this infant die, definitely brought it home to roost. It has gone from academic to real world. And so she is doing, now Bree was no, Bree, Jemmy was nowhere near them, right? Jemmy was nowhere near them, but she just, she wants to do everything she can to prevent his illness and death because she had just seen a baby die. And a mom.
They all just did. Good God.
Dinah tells us through Claire that Frank, she believes, was the first death Bree had experienced personally, meaning she had known maybe my friend's aunt died or my friend's grandma died.
She left. They left the UK where all their physical family was, and they were all in Boston. And if they died there, they only had friends. They didn't have family, like not real family, not close family, not like this, or nothing you would see. Because death was so sterile. And it is so it can be so sterile now. We don't think about how messy and awful and terrible it is, because you think of most people, you see movies where people are dying in hospitals and, you know, there's machines and they slowly die and then this happened and they waste away. It's not any of this visceral, horrible, unending, not unending, but you can't do anything about it. You can't fix it. You just have to watch. I mean, it's like the helplessness of that. So yeah, boil your skin, boil your hands off, my friend.
So Frank, she believes, is the first death that Bree had actually experienced personally. Quote, but it would never have struck her in any visceral way that something so negligible as a germ could suddenly snatch away her child. Not until yesterday. Unquote.
And that was chapter 61. Join us next time when we will be discussing, when we will be continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along with chapters 62, Amoeba, 63, Moment of Decision, and 64, I Am the Resurrection, Part 2, which kind of feels like a good ending point for that week. I Am the Resurrection, Part 2, as opposed to Part 3, Part 1, or Part 4.
Again, a very special thank to this week's co-producer, Linda Z. To find out more about how you can support us, maybe become a co-producer, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon. And to answer, co-producer is someone who supports us at monthly at the $10 a month level via Patreon. And there are some special things that come with that. Early access, ad-free episodes, and you get to be our co-producer. You go on a list. We always we're always going through our co-producers, so that never stops. And you get thanked and credit on our episodes. So we would love to have you join us there.
If you're interested in any Outlander Pod branded merchandise, you can go to www.outlanderpod.com/shop. And if you just can't get enough of talking about Outlander, please join us online at www.outlanderpod.com/group.
And if you haven't joined our text community, why not? It is free. Text us hello at 916-659-5112. Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/OutlanderPod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at OutlanderPod.